This is Washington Watch Weekly, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Now here's our host, the president of the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. The House was back in session this week, and continuing at the forefront of the discussion was Obamacare. Even after the website reboot, significant security concerns remain. Ohio Congressman Bill Johnson joined me for that discussion. And more advances on the pro-life front as advocates of destructive embryonic stem cell research are moving to ethical and effective adult stem cells. Dr. David Prentice has the details. Also, Mike Ferris with Homeschool Legal Defense gives us the latest on the German homeschool family that the Obama administration is trying to deport. All that coming up on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you to go to the website, tonyperkins.com, where you can find out more about our topics for this weekend. Also, you can sign up for my daily update right there on the website. Also, check out the store, some great stocking stuffers right there at tonyperkins.com. Well, earlier this week, pro-life Americans received some very positive information coming out of the stem cell research world. Two states that have heavily promoted embryonic stem cell research, California and Maryland, are shifting their money to something that actually works, adult stem cells. With the lack of success with their embryonic research, the groups have decided to put money toward ethical stem cell research that doesn't destroy human embryos. FRC Senior Fellow for Life Sciences, Dr. David Prentice, joined me on Wednesday with the details. So this is good news.
Very good. And, you know, it's as you said, they're finally catching up to reality here, what we've been saying for years. Adult stem cells, the ethical science, is the successful science, especially for patients. Over 60,000 people a year now being treated with adult stem cells.
And part of the pressure may be that there are other states that are actually now zeroing in directly on adult stem cells, such as Kansas, which you were a part of helping set up the research and treatment center using solely adult stem cells there in Kansas.
That's right. We were able to pass a bill that set up a new comprehensive adult stem cell therapy center where they're going to be treating patients as their first goal, but also doing basic research, training physicians to treat more patients, educating the public as well. But it's a comprehensive adult stem cell-centered idea. And I think other states are starting to catch on too. And it, like you say, is putting some pressure on those who have focused on the unethical embryonic.
Now, I have not seen your scoreboard in a while. How many different types of conditions have been treated with adult stem cells?
Well, we haven't actually tabulated all. There are a lot of things coming out. There's at least 80 different conditions, diseases, injuries, where with the published peer-reviewed science, you can document that adult stem cells have helped patients. And, of course, the score for embryonic, zero.
Yeah, it was interesting in reading some of these articles. It's not like they're coming out and announcing, hey, we made a mistake. Embryonic stem cell research doesn't work. They continue to try to blur the line, saying, oh, no, we're, you know, stem cells are working. We're just taking a different path on this particular kind. But we have a place for all of them. We need all of them.
That's right. And you point out a particular problem here is that they usually drop the adjective. They won't say embryonic. They won't say adult. They'll just say stem cells. And then they'll claim all the successes of adult stem cells for embryonic.
That's been from the very beginning. You and I have talked about this before, but going back to when I was in the legislature in Louisiana and being one of the pro-life leaders, this was kind of on the frontier, the pioneering portion of this. And you know, I was struggling to figure my way through this because they didn't talk about embryonic stem cell research. They talked about stem cell research, and they kind of lumped them all together. But as you've pointed out, there have been no successful treatments with embryonic, but yet we still see government money going into that. We see others pursuing it. And in part, you've pointed this out, and this is a question that I know you're asked, I'm asked every time we talk about this, why? Why then would they pursue embryonic versus adult stem cell? And it does come down to money, does it?
It comes down to money. It comes down to ideology. And it's science that might be fascinating but has this unethical taint to it. But they want to do it. It's expensive. we have to sell it to you saying we're going to treat, you know, all known maladies, as one former senator said, and make you think that they're going to come up with all these treatments, when in reality then, as we've said, they will take all the successes of adult and claim those for the unethical, unsuccessful embryonic.
And one of the other aspects of that, when you're using adult stem cells, you can't patent someone's own adult stem cells.
There's that as well. The embryonic stem cells, they have patented, and more people even want to patent their own, which is why this sort of land rush into embryos. But you're not going to patent your or my bone marrow or brain adult stem cells. You're going to take them out, process them, concentrate them, and give them back to us.
But as you pointed out, the bottom line is it's a view of life in what's moral and what's immoral. And yeah. You know, just because you can do something, I was having this conversation with somebody regarding some other forms of science. Just because you can do something doesn't mean you should do it.
That's right. You know, what this new report does show, though, in terms of a trend, is that the ethical science, where you do say this is something that can be done ethically, is also the successful science. It's not a poisoned well like the embryonic stem cells and so on. But, you know, scientists do need to ask that question. Is this something that ethically I can do? Does this preserve human life and protect it, or does it use it as a raw material?
But this is a good news story, because what we're seeing is that truth is winning out, in that, as you pointed out, not only is it ethical, but it's effective.
That's right. And again, that is the main take-home message here, is that the adult stem cells, you don't harm the donor, and it really works for the patients.
So, what can pro-life Americans take away from this?
Well, definitely we need to put all of our resources behind the ethical adult stem cells. We need to, as pro-lifers, let our legislators know we don't want any of our tax dollars going to the unethical science.
Let me ask you, we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you this question in terms of kind of looking at the area of adult stem cell research. Is that still a wide open frontier where there's a lot of room for discovery and work to be done?
There really is a lot yet to be done. And even making the current treatments better, much more needs to be done. And that's where we ought to be focusing, because it puts the patients first.
So we're still on the front end of this.
We are. And much more to come. We talk about 80 diseases and injuries and so on, but we really need to focus and get more done.
Great. Dr. David Prentice, congratulations again, having your hand in something that's been successful.
Thank you.
Again, that was Dr. David Prentice. Coming up next, Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio talks to us about the security concerns that still exist with the Obamacare website. Don't go away. We're coming back with more of the Washington Watch Weekend Edition right after this.
We are grateful for the men and women who are defending our great country. Many of our soldiers, sailors, Marines, airmen, and Coast Guardsmen have risked their lives so we can remain free. Free to speak our minds, free to associate, free to practice our faith as we see fit. But these same men and women are facing threats to the very freedoms that they're protecting. Many members of our military are motivated by a deep and abiding Christian faith. Their faith is not merely an add-on, but the foundation and motivation for their sacrifice. Some of them are facing pressure to abandon that faith, to hide it away, to minimize its uncomfortable implications, or even deny its restorative and hopeful power. We won't stand for that. We believe that their freedoms are worth protecting. To follow this conversation on Facebook or Twitter, find us at #MilitaryFreedom. That's #MilitaryFreedom.
Wish you were in D.C. so you could attend all the exciting FRC events? Now you can be. FRC University provides anyone access to all past lecture events from anywhere. Experts from many fields, including professors, members of Congress, policy analysts, and pastors, give their analysis of today's cutting-edge issues. FRC professionally archives each of these events and provides a link to them through the FRC University webpage. Wondering about the most recent Supreme Court term? Check out Ken Klukowski's analysis of the most important cases. Want to hear an inspiring story of the power of the gospel? Listen to Dr. Rosaria Butterfield's journey from being a lesbian professor at Syracuse University to a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ, transformed and serving Him as a pastor's wife. These exciting events and many others can be accessed at www.frc.org/university.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. Let me again encourage you to go to our website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about all of the weekend's topics. And right there on the website, you can sign up for my daily update at tonyperkins.com. Well, we found out this past week that security for the Obamacare website, healthcare.gov, was an afterthought. The administration has been scrambling to shift the focus back to the positive side, but we can't overlook the reality that many Americans' most private information is subject to hackers with very little effort to get the information, not to mention the fact that the ACA navigators can be convicted felons. Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio joined me on Tuesday to give us the inside scoop on what is really at stake here. Congressman Johnson is an expert in this field. Before joining the House of Representatives, he built high-tech businesses similar to healthcare.gov. Here is my interview with Congressman Bill Johnson. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you so much. How are things in the Buckeye State?
Well, we're doing very well as of Saturday. We're number two in the polls and climbing, so we're doing well.
Well, I can't say as much for my Tigers, but anyway, moving right along here. Now, you spent years in the tech world. What are your thoughts about the security issues that are now swirling around the Obamacare website?
Well, first of all, David Kennedy is exactly right, and I've been saying this now for months. You can't fix something that is this broken. You've probably heard my analogy before, but you can't recook eggs, Tony. Once they're scrambled, you can't turn them into over medium eggs. You have to start over again, and someone has to eat the cost of the eggs. But adding more cooks and throwing more money at it is not going to fix the problem. And that's what we've got here. Security has to be built into the system from the ground up. And we know we have very clear evidence now that nothing of the sort occurred. And now they're faced with the problems that they're faced with. What struck me as the most telling comment that Mr. Kennedy made, or that he and that panel made at the hearing that you referred to, they unanimously concurred that given the security issues, Americans should not use the site at the present time because of the security, the possibilities of revealing their personal information. This is a disaster.
Congressman Johnson, doesn't this put a lot of families in a very tough position? I mean, either they put at potential risk their private information out there that can not just be on this website, but because it's kind of a hub, all of these government agencies tap into it. They either do that or they run the risk of not complying with the mandate at the end of the month.
Absolutely. It's placing them at risk, Tony. And, you know, that's exactly the reason why for the last 3 years that we have been working tirelessly to try and get the administration to understand that we understood what was going to happen. And we've tried to get delays in the mandates so that they can take the time to fix these problems. Now, keep in mind, you can't fix the website, but there are more problems to this program than just the website. For example, insurance companies are now telling us that they aren't even getting the information from about a third of the enrollees that think that they have enrolled in the program. They're not even getting the information, and there's about 40% of the website that's not even yet built. I mean, this was like rolling out a car off the assembly line with two tires missing off of one side and expecting it to go from L.A. To New York. It's crazy.
Well, but government can do everything, according to some. So,
well, but Ronald Reagan had a different idea, and so do I. You know, the last thing you want to try and solve your problem, more government is never the answer.
I would agree with you. That would be my opinion as well, Congressman Johnson. Let me ask you this, because this is a point that you just made. About a third of the people who are going on thinking they have health care, are they getting some kind of response back from the website saying, thanks for enrolling, but that information is then never getting to the hands of the insurance, so they may show up at the doctor's office or at the hospital and have no coverage?
Well, that's my understanding of what's happening. Because the information that we're getting is from, comparing the numbers of people that have enrolled to the number of people that the insurance providers are confirming on the other end. That's how we know that this is a problem. And the problem is, we really don't know who that one-third, we don't know who they are. So you got to check 100% of them to find the one-third. It is a disaster.
Well, Congressman Johnson, what are the American families, what are American families supposed to do at this point? I mean, because if they put their information out there, certainly nobody's going to be held liable for releasing that information. The government claims sovereign immunity. What are they to do?
Well, the American people are right now, as we stand here today, bound by a mandate in the law that has been perpetrated on them by President Obama and his allies, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, and the American people need to let their voices be heard. The president and his team need to come to the table and start having an adult conversation about delaying these mandates until we can get to the bottom of this and look at common sense solutions. There are some things with the health care law's intent, and let me emphasize that. Its intent that we need to consider keeping things like no exclusions for pre-existing conditions and letting kids stay on their parents' health insurance until they're age 26. But we need to roll the clock back and unwind much of this law and free up the insurance carriers to reinsert competition into the process so that they can deal directly with their clients, without the government being a middle person, the middleman, and monkeying things up. Needs to happen.
Yeah, I think people need to understand, Congressman Johnson, that a lot of these problems, and I would add to the potential fixes that are in Obamacare, is the pulling across state lines, allowing bigger to go across those state lines. That's something you don't need Obamacare to do. That's something that they were prevented from doing by existing law. So you don't have to scrap the whole system in order to provide
some fixes.
No,
you certainly don't. And you look at some of the more onerous parts of the law, the caps on health savings accounts. Most Americans can pay for their routine health insurance needs or their health care coverage with pre-tax dollars that's drawing interest in a health savings account cheaper than they can buy these massive insurance policies that they're now finding out on the government exchanges. And we need to take those limits off of those health savings accounts so that more Americans can use them.
Congressman Johnson, one last question. Now that you and your colleagues are actually having register and go into these exchanges and get your health care as well.
Right.
Do you think that the potential is there in the next 2 weeks to get members on both sides of the aisle to come together with some type of temporary extension or some solution so that Americans are not at risk here?
Well, Tony, I wish I could tell you that is a likelihood. I can tell you that we have already had bipartisan agreement that extensions and delays are needed. We've already had that. The question is, can we get the president and Harry Reid to come to the table and have an adult conversation about it? Because so far, they have not been willing to do that.
Well, Congressman, thanks so much for this update today. It's not good news, but I think Americans need to know where things stand and that there are those on Capitol Hill working to try to bring about a resolution.
You betcha. Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Tony, call me anytime.
All right. Congressman Bill Johnson of the 6th Congressional District of Ohio. And we'll be tracking this very, very closely over the next couple of weeks because the deadlines hit, many deadlines, actually. The mandate takes effect January the 1st, the mandate as to the individual mandate, but also you have the contraceptive mandate that goes into effect for religious organizations and nonprofits. Several more This is kind of the second or third wave of Obamacare that takes place January the 1st. So we'll be tracking this as Congress is back in town for the next couple of weeks, hopefully, to come up with some type of resolution. That was Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio talking about the security concerns that still exist with the Obamacare website. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to be coming right back with an interview with Mike Ferris from Homeschool Legal Defense, giving us the latest on the German homeschool family that the Obama administration is trying to deport. That's right here on the weekend edition of Washington Watch, right after this.
Your Congress is at it again, considering the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, or ENDA. It sounds innocent enough, no one's in favor of discrimination. But ENDA actually proposes a form of discrimination, one that would force businesses to make hiring, firing, and promotion decisions not based on a person's qualifications, but on their sexual expression. Outspoken homosexuals, cross-dressers, and transgendered workers would automatically qualify for special treatment that other workers would not. In reality, ENDA would force Christian employers to ignore or allow immoral and problematic behavior in their preschools, summer camps, schools, and businesses, or face litigation. As one hair salon owner testified, the government can force her to hire transgendered employees, but it can't force customers who are uncomfortable with them to come into her salon. ENDA is not the way to go. To find out more, visit frc.org/ENDA. FRC has several exciting internship options for college students and graduates. Apply for positions in media, policy research, government affairs, and many others. FRC interns experience weekly simulations of policy debate to practice defending Christian policy principles in an increasingly hostile environment. Interns are teamed with an FRC expert working diligently to further the cause of faith, family, and freedom. Interested? Go to www.frc.org/internships to learn more.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks so much for being with us. And if I don't get a chance to do so before we leave you this weekend, let me say Merry Christmas. Well, we've covered extensively on this program the situation regarding the Remeike family. Now, this family's from Germany. They were homeschooling their children where it's illegal there. So the family fled to the U.S., and they were granted temporary asylum back during the Bush administration. Well, now, because the Obama administration apparently is not sympathetic, the Remeikes may be forced to go back to Germany, but they're awaiting an appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court in an effort to stay here in the country. Their attorney representing the family is Mike Ferris of Homeschool Legal Defense, and he joined me on Tuesday with an update. Well, give our listeners the latest on the Remeike family and their status.
We got encouraging news last week, Tony, when the Supreme Court directed the Justice Department to respond to our petition for review by the Supreme Court. They do that relatively infrequently, and it substantially elevates the chances that the court's going to take the case. Interestingly, that order came just a few days after we had a day of prayer and fasting for the family in the Supreme Court, and so we, you know, really see the hand of God in answering prayers. And we are hopeful. The government has until December the 19th to file that answer. It's possible that they could ask for an extension of that time. And if so, it would delay it until after the holidays. But fairly soon we'll be getting that reply. And then shortly after that, the Supreme Court will tell us whether or not they're going to take the case.
Now, Mike, we've talked about this before, but this is much bigger than, as important as it is for any parent that's wanting the right to exercise the right to educate their child, and I think it's a God-given right.
Right.
This is bigger than the Remeike family.
It is. There is, the technical legal issue opens the door for a really big, important issue. The technical legal issue is, what is the basis for deeming a law of another country to be illegitimate for asylum purposes? Because the Remeikes are being persecuted by you know, just the simple enforcement of the German law, which bans homeschooling. And our rules on asylum are that normally, if somebody's just being criminally prosecuted for some ordinary law, then you don't get any asylum for that. But we have a rule that says if the law's not legitimate, then the then you can still get asylum on the basis of that. So the question before the court is, how do you determine when a law is legitimate? We contend that you would either use the U.S. Constitution to determine that for the purposes of our asylum laws, and if that's the case, then the family has a human right under our Constitution, or since it's an international context, then using international human rights standards to judge Germany and German law would be appropriate because we're judging them on standards that Germany's agreed to. They've signed these treaties and so on. And so it's not for our domestic purposes, but for analyzing another country's law. So either way, the Romeikas would win. The only way that we don't win is if the judges are going to decide for themselves what they think is legitimate, which is what happened in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. That court simply said, we don't think it's a big deal that families are banned from homeschooling. We don't think that implicates a fundamental human right, and we don't think that human rights really matter here. And the Obama administration has been right there saying the same thing the whole time. They don't think that any nation violates any standards of any kind if they ban all parents from having an alternative education and require everybody to accept instruction from the government standards and government schools only.
So that opinion from the Obama administration could have implications for us here in the United States.
It certainly does. The technical argument is they're saying that any country is legitimate in enacting a law that bans homeschooling. And if that's the case, then we're any country. And so if it can be banned there, then it can be banned here. I mean, it stands to reason. If a family coming here can't get the freedom to do that, then as a matter of right, then what they're saying is that our laws of homeschooling are not a matter of right, but a matter of privilege. The ability to opt out of public schools is no longer a right in this country. It's simply a governmental privilege. And if the government wants it, what the government gives you, the government can take away.
Right.
And it ultimately is a determination of whether or not rights come from God or their privileges coming from government. That's,
absolutely,
you know, when you really soar up to 35,000 feet and look at it and say, what does it really mean? That's what it really means.
Again, that was Mike Ferris from the Homeschool Legal Defense. To find out more about the great work that Mike is doing, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for this weekend. Thanks so much for being a part of the Washington Watch Weekend Edition. I encourage you to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, find out more about what we're doing here in Washington as we advance faith, family, and freedom.
Washington Watch Weekly is a donor-supported ministry of the Family Research Council.